Welcome to This is America in VOA Special English. I'm Bob Doty.
And I'm Shirley Griffith. This week on our program, we explore letterboxing. And later, we look at what a growing number of writers are doing to get their books published.
Letterboxing is an activity that requires a container, usually a plastic box. People put a notebook and personal rubber stamp inside. Then they hide it in a public place and offer clues and directions for other letterboxers to search for it. Those who find it mark their own notebook with the stamp, and they leave an imprint of their stamp in the notebook in the box. Then they put the letterbox back in its hiding place for the next treasure hunter to find.
On this day, James and Nancy Hartigan and their two children are in Western Ireland planning the rest of the day's drive.
Climber to knock around Kilmurry McMahon to Lab, and then back to Kilcarran, and then we'll hit the battery at Lac Isle, back out, probably hit the cemetery, and then up the road.
The Hartigans have come from Ashland, Virginia, to see family and leave behind a letterbox.
We've been doing this letterboxing thing for a while, and it's just kind of a neat way of connecting with people, you know, as opposed to sending emails and whatnot. It's something you have to travel to go get.
10-year-old Sean Hartigan carved the design of a train to use as his personal stamp.
I definitely like the whole little letterbox thing. I'm actually kind of hoping for, like, first next time we come, like, 8 or 9 notes in there.
Sean's older sister, Maggie, has written an introductory passage in the notebook.
I wrote about my hat, and I wrote about how awesome Ireland is, and that I'm going to move here when I get rich, along with many other things.
But first, the Hartigans have to hide their box. That involves a long drive through the rain over bumpy roads. They arrive after dark at the final resting place for many of James Hartigan's ancestors.
This is Kilcarran Cemetery. The gravestones would be several hundred years old.
The Hartigans place their letterbox in a crack in the cemetery wall. They have given clues to family members about where to search for it.
Randy Hall is an American software engineer and author of The Letterboxer's Companion. He says letterboxing began in Devon, England in 1845.
A gentleman left his calling card out on the moors and said, anyone to find this, also do the same, or write a little note, that sort of thing.
Hikers started leaving their cards in remote areas. Directions for finding them spread by word of mouth, as one person would tell another. In time, stamps replaced cards. But for more than 100 years, the activity was limited to a small number of people in England.
In 1998, a magazine story in the United States introduced letterboxing to many Americans. Its popularity grew with the Internet. The Internet has become the main method for letterboxers to share clues. Randy Hall says clues in Britain often require people to use a compass to find a letterbox. But Americans often give directions in the form of a puzzle.
Kind of like setting up treasure hunts. It's like a mental activity, you know, a brainy activity.
Mr. Hall is known for his complex puzzles. For example, the only clue he provides for locating a letterbox in North Carolina is a poem written like a Japanese haiku. Rolls pal in a noose. Sign marks his lupine brother. pine tree to the north.
I like people to have an aha experience when they figure it out. They feel, wow, that's really cool. It's just to create a sense of discovery. I don't like it where it's just a simple walk down the path and look under a rock.
Some people like to do letterboxing while on vacation. Andrea Wyman and her family make it a part of every vacation they take, including a trip last year to Ohio.
We were letterboxing on Lake Erie, and we ended up in a forest area that we probably wouldn't have gone to at all, but the letterbox was hidden within a little campground.
Ms. Wyman is a professor at Edinburgh University in Pennsylvania. She has designed a course on letterboxing for grandparents and their grandchildren. She says letterboxing encourages generations to work together while enjoying the outdoors and exploring new places. Also, solving the puzzles and following the clues are good workouts for the brain.
When you're trying to help someone find your letterbox, you're editing, reading, and reviewing everything that you write down on your clue list so that you can help someone come and find your hidden book.
Her 11-year-old daughter, Hannah, has found many letterboxes. Hannah's stamp is a snowflake. She says letterboxing allows her to do cool stuff that does not involve computers.
We went to this park, and then it said, from this certain tree, take 42 third-grader steps. And I was a third-grader at that time, so I got to figure out where the letterbox was.
For Hannah and other letterboxers, the treasure is in the hunt.
More and more writers are self-publishing their work. Self-publishing means you not only write the book, but handle production and sales as well. In the past, most publications were self-published. Over time, the job of author and publisher became separate. But finding a publisher can be difficult. So in the last few years, a growing number of new authors have chosen to do it themselves. In fact, industry experts say more books are now self-published than come from traditional publishers.
Patricia Ruth's first novel is called Holly Heights.
It's a slice of suburban life and a story everyone can relate to.
After she wrote and edited the book, her next step was to look for a publisher.
I did try to go the traditional publishing route by, sending inquiries to agents and publishers.
It was a long and unsuccessful process.
I'm a member of a very popular club of authors that get rejected from agents and publishers. I mean, I would get rejections from agents. It would come on a strip of paper, like maybe 2 inches long. I mean, not even the courtesy of a full-page letter. I mean, it's outrageous, some of the stuff that you get back.
A visit to a book fair showed Patricia Ruth that she did not have to depend on traditional publishers.
I saw that there was so much going on with self-publishing and empowering authors. I felt that it was very doable.
The first step was to discover how to do it.
It's as easy to start as just Googling the word self-publishing, and you'll see that there's quite a number of companies that do provide self-publishing services, and it's really very simple.
One company that provides self-publishing services is CreateSpace, a part of Amazon.com. Libby Johnson McKee is the managing director of CreateSpace.
One of the key things that is a challenge for authors is coming up with their cover. And we've created a tool called Cover Creator, which allows you to take templates and put in your photos or use some of our pre-formatted templates to create your own cover. Once your title is finished and ready for production, we then produce that book print on demand.
Print on demand avoids the problem of printing more copies of a book than an author can sell. But Patricia Ruth says marketing a book is often more difficult than writing it.
My recommendation is to start local. In my community, my local bookstore has a table for local authors. It's a matter of reaching out to your booksellers and getting them to feature your book. Maybe do a book signing. I did one. You want to do a press announcement, send it to local radio, TV, newspapers.
Lauren Rees of the Rees Literary Agency says self-publishing has its limitations. Mr. Rees represents authors to traditional publishers.
Obviously, self-publishing gives a lot more control to the author and allows them to fulfill their goals without having to go through a pretty difficult, tiresome, and lengthy process fraught with rejection. However, there are significant limitations to self-publishing, particularly distribution, packaging, editorial support, and credibility.
Margaret Hollister self-published Inheriting China. Her book is a memoir about growing up as the daughter of missionaries in China in the 1920s and 30s. She agrees with Lauren Rees about the limitations of self-publishing.
It's impossible. It's very, very stressful. So much work and so expensive. Maybe you write naturally. Maybe that's a natural thing for you. Publishing and formatting a book and trying to find a market and all that, that is not natural. We need to learn that just as you would learn a profession.
David Minkler is an editor who helped Margaret Hollister publish her book last year. His advice to authors who want to follow her example?
I would say they would have to learn some software and be pretty good at it. They should know enough to be able to scan pictures and organize text and proofread.
Digital technology makes it easier for authors to self-publish. But David Minkler says traditional publishers are here to stay.
A lot of self-published books seem to be pretty trivial and really not of much interest to a wide audience. So if you're talking about a wide audience, I think established publishers will continue.
Libby Johnson McKee at Create Space agrees, but says self-publishing is also here to stay.
Since 2002, the growth of independently published books is over 8,000%. So there's really a movement in the industry because anyone who wants to tell their story, and whatever that story might be, can be out there. And I think that trend of democratization of the publishing process will continue.
Our program was written and produced by Brianna Blake, with reporting by Susan Logue and Faiza El-Masri. I'm Shirley Griffith.
And I'm Bob Doty. Do you like letterboxing? Have you ever self-published a book? Tell us about it at voaspecialenglish.com. While you're there, you can find transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of our programs. We also have activities for people learning English. Join us again next week for This is America in VOA Special English.